This is a CBC original podcast.
He said, this woman is pregnant. I know she's pregnant. Let's go in and see what's going on. So we went in. It was a dirt floor. And there was a young woman. And she started labor. There's a mom giving birth right here in the village. And she's just lying on a black plastic bag. There she was. A couple of women had water in plastic buckets around here, and they were wiping her forehead. And there she was, in more and more and more agony as she went into labor. And she was literally sitting on the dirt. This had been a vacant lot where all these tents were, and she was just in the gravel and in the dirt. Has anyone called a doctor or a nurse?
No doctor.
Is there a midwife here? Is there a sage-femme?
No.
This was a week, 10 days after the earthquake. There was little food, there was no medicine, there was no nurse, there was no doctor. She's just going to give birth here in this tent. And I was saying to myself, what is this baby's future going to be? Here we are in the hellhole of earth. How is this possible that this baby is going to live? But let me start at the beginning. I'm David Gutnick, and this is Backstory. Haiti, 2010.
A monster earthquake has struck Haiti tonight, 7 in magnitude.
The images and news reports are unbearable to watch.
There are bodies everywhere in Port-au-Prince. The living and the dead lay side by side overnight in the streets.
It's not good like that.
Most of the house in that area are completely gone, and people right now working on top of a lot of dead bodies.
So much distress, suffering, and loss.
If you're helpless in Haiti, you're on your own.
I almost died in that earthquake. By the grace of God, I'm still alive.
You know, the streets were piled with rubble, and people were wandering around desperate, and there we were, arriving, trying to make sense of it.
That was the lobby and some apartment. They collapsed completely.
Look at this.
Yep.
How's your family?
Family? My dad died, and I have a little cousin of 7 years. He died also. So now we're living on the street like everybody else.
Here you are on the outskirts of Port-au-Prince, and I knew Port-au-Prince. I knew those neighborhoods. I'd been there earlier. And you couldn't tell if a building was 2 floors high or 6 floors high because they had just collapsed like accordions. And one of the first things I saw when I arrived in Port-au-Prince was a pile of bodies. And, of course, people had been desperately, it had been, I think, a week, people had desperately been pulling bodies out of buildings and trying to bury them. And this pile of bodies, someone had tried to burn it, and they'd run out of gasoline. So there they were, half-burned bodies in the street of Port-au-Prince. I can't get that out of my mind, because for me it was, people were trying to do their best. They've been they'd been devastated, and that's what they were left with. The mom over here is washing her child in the water basin that's perched on top of all those fallen stones.
Yeah, it's the last time you do actually chores, and people are going to be praying in the nighttime before everybody falls asleep wherever they can. And they're all expecting the pastor to start the prayer.
God
The feelings that I felt from people, it was the opposite of a little bit what I'd expected.
Le Seigneur est digne.
We pay for the body bags, we buy everything, and then we take them.
Sister Lorraine Mallow, who's a Canadian, who is with the Sisters of St. Joseph of Toronto, been living in Haiti for years. So Sister Mallow had organized to go with a truck.
We pick up the bodies at the General Hospital morgue. It's pretty gory.
And then put the bodies into body bags. And then they would put the bodies, one by one by one by one by one, into the back of a truck and drive into the hills outside of Port-au-Prince. And then she'd hired grave diggers, maybe a dozen guys, who had dug long trenches, 100 feet long by 3 feet wide. And Sister Mallow and some of the men would then take a body. There was a priest. A prayer was said over the body. And Sister Mallow, this frail Canadian nun, would help carry the body and gently place the body into the ground and stand there and pray. And in the background, there's a band, six or seven fellows with trombones and a drum and saxophone playing music. It's part of the tradition. And I stayed very close to Sister Mallow and I said, how can you do this? And she said,
I think Haitians have so little dignity in their lives that I'm happy that at the end they get a little bit of dignity and are buried with a prayer and with music. This band is, Haitians have a band at their funeral, it's a custom, and so Father hires this band so that they will have what all Haitians have. So for me, at least I know they're getting this last moment of dignity before they lead to rest.
Maman, Jésus qui sauve, maman, délivrance.
You know, sometimes in life, you actually do think that you've met a saint. And I felt that I was somehow in the presence of a saint. It was a strange place to be, up above Port-au-Prince on that day with Sister Lorraine.
Mama qui règne en ciel, Mama qui fait pouvoir.
This Sunday morning, I will pray for all the people that we buried. Although we try to be dignified, it is so undignified. And I pray for these nameless Haitians. We don't know their names, we don't know their lives. And yet, I know that their name is etched on the hand of God.
House playing with a lot of kids, and then I felt all the house is shaking with me, Even the couch I sat on, Alpha is shaking with me. This is my first time I felt earthquake longer than I ever feel in my life.
I'd been to Haiti a few years before the earthquake, doing a story about a Montreal woman, actually, who was a Haitian, Anita Merizier. So I became very close to the Merizier family because I went to Haiti and I did a story about that, that here was Anita working at a quilt-making factory in Montreal, and every couple of weeks she would take $100 and she was feeding dozens of people back in Port-au-Prince. So I became friends with the family. So after the earthquake, I managed to find the Merizier family. Their house had almost completely collapsed, and you know, there they were, Madsen, the dad, Nadine, Richard, Robert, Maxime, Emmanuel, Noella. You know, the whole family was there, living in this little tent. And I'd been watching the way other people had been covering this earthquake and been watching television. You would see the camera would pan over these tent villages and say, behind me, thousands of people are living in tents and here's what's going on, blah, blah, blah. And it just felt distant to me. So I convinced my producer at the CBC to allow me. I had to sign a waiver saying that I was giving up my armed guard and that I would not be insured while I went into the tent village and lived in the tent with the Merizier family for 48 hours. It's 5:25 in the morning. Just been woken up by people singing in the next tent over. They're about 5 feet from my head. I'm lying on a shag carpet that's right on the dirt. Oh, my mouth tastes like charcoal. And so there I was with these people who I had grown to know, love actually, living in this stinky little tent, which was, oh, maybe 8 feet by 12 feet. When we went to bed, we were six men and six women. So the six men, we sort of went like sardines on one side of the tent, and our feet touched the feet of the women who were sleeping at the other side of the tent. And I still remember that, you know, I was thinking about the big picture of Haiti and how journalists were talking about the big picture, the thousands, the hundreds of thousands, the numbers which were just impossible to understand. So when I told the story of the Merizier family, I wanted to make sure that people understood that they weren't victims. They were complete human beings. One of the myths of much journalism, I think, is that there's some kind of objectivity and that the journalist can stand apart from humanity. You try and create a distance between yourself and the tragedy that you see around you. With the Merizier family, it made me question the idea of journalistic objectivity and how can we as human beings push away other human beings. And it seems to me that part of what makes a story work is that you can hear in the journalist's voice some kind of connection to that story. Yes, you still ask the hard questions, but the passion and the curiosity that you bring as a journalist doesn't mean that you also have to throw away a certain kind of humanity.
When I got right outside this gate, I looked out in the streets and I could see everywhere was white, all white with dust. Port-au-Prince had collapsed.
You create a kind of distance, as a journalist often, between who you are as a person and who you are as a journalist. As a person, if I had seen those bodies or, you know, seen the children wandering around with bandaged up and bruised and lost, crying, as a person, you want to get out and hug them or hold them or do whatever you can, offer them some kind of comfort. But as a journalist, you're there, and I struggled with that right away as we got into Haiti. How do I report on this? And how do I offer my humanity? And what is my job? Well, my job is making sure that the people back home, the people in Canada, feel this. When they hear my words, when they see these images, somehow it goes past just going into their brains. You're wanting to do stories that go into their soul. And so you're looking for those images that will make people wake up to this tragedy.
And the only way I cope, really, is I concentrate on the little area that I'm trying to help. When I think of globally of Haiti, it's kind of overwhelming. But I know that what I'm doing here today, that's a little corner of my world that's a little bit better because I'm here. There is hope. There's always hope. Hope is a virtue, and we try to hang on with all our hearts.
Backstory is recorded and produced by Cecil Fernandez. I'm David Gutnick.
For more CBC original podcasts, go to cbc.ca/originalpodcasts.